You're listening to Pursuing Justice, a podcast from Juvenile Law Center.
Each episode spotlights a pressing issue in the child welfare and juvenile justice systems and brings you true stories from the youth who deal with them.
Pursuing Justice is produced by Juvenile Law Center, a public interest law firm dedicated to advancing the rights and well-being of children in jeopardy. Consider supporting this work and giving to the Juvenile Law Center by going to the support page on www.jlc.org.
Hello and welcome to Pursuing Justice. I'm Yoe Shaw. Today is Friday, February 11th, and it's the third part in our Reform in the Wake of Luzerne series, where we examine structural issues in the juvenile justice system that allowed the Luzerne County Kids for Cash scandal to happen in the first place, and to see how the current state of reform stands. Today's issue, shackling youth in courtrooms. But before we go any further, today is also the fifth day of former Judge Mark Chivarella's federal criminal trial in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Outside the federal court in Scranton, Pennsylvania, where Chivarella is now standing trial for his alleged role in a conspiracy dubbed Kids for Cash. In opening statements this morning, federal prosecutors said Chivarella treated his office like a money-making machine.
If this is your first time listening to our series, here's a quick recap of what happened and why we care about this trial. In 2009, two judges in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, were accused of getting millions of dollars in kickbacks for sending thousands of kids away to for-profit detention centers, in many cases for really minor offenses. One of the judges, Michael Conahan, pled guilty last year, but the other judge, Mark Chivarella, is on criminal trial for the first time starting this past Monday. If you want a good summary of the entire Kids for Cash scandal, you can check out our first episode in the series called Makings of a Scandal. Moving on to today's podcast, one of the most shocking things about the Kids for Cash scandal that kept coming up, besides the kickbacks, was the repeated use of shackles on youth in Chivarella's courtroom. Currently, there are a few different types of restraints that are used on youth in courtrooms. There can be handcuffs, cuffs that go around the ankles, chains that hang from the waist. Even straitjackets are sometimes used. On today's program, we delve deeper into this topic of shackling, which was identified on our last show as one of the scandal's major structural issues that needs to be addressed in reform.
In Judge Chivarella's courtroom, it was routine to shackle kids either right as they were coming into the courtroom.
Juvenile Law Center attorney Ria Saha Shah.
Or immediately after they were adjudicated delinquent and being sent to a placement facility. Parents said that they would be sitting in the waiting room and they'd watch families go in together and parents walking out in tears as they heard the clanging of the chains.
Not only was shackling traumatic for the kids and their families in Luzerne, but there was little if no reason for their repeated use.
It was degrading, but most importantly, it was completely unnecessary. We don't shackle adults who come into the courtroom unless there's some issue that we think that they're going to escape or they're going to cause disruption. You know, there was really no rhyme or reason as to why kids were being shackled. In our lead plaintiff, Hillary Trance's case, Judge Chivarella ordered her to be shackled based on the charge of harassment for a MySpace parody. And that's just one example of shackling in really minor offenses. Another youth, only 10 years old, for accidentally starting a fire when she was playing with the lighter in her room, was shackled in the courtroom as well.
I think they were silver, and they were huge. So they put them on my arms and my feet, and they were pretty tight where I couldn't even move my feet to get in the car. But they wanted me to get into the car. And I told the one guard or the police officer that I couldn't get into the car because it was just too tight for my feet for me to even move my ankle. And he's just like, get in, anyways.
Maymay was 10 years old when former Judge Chivarella sent her to a for-profit detention facility for accidentally starting a fire in her bedroom. Despite being just 4 feet tall and about 72 pounds, Maymay was shackled on both hands and feet each time she went to court for a hearing in front of Chivarella.
When it was my turn, I just went into the courtroom and just sat there, and I didn't really understand what was going on because it didn't make any sense. All I know is I was in handcuffs, both on my hands and on my feet. It made me really nervous because I felt like a criminal. Like, I didn't feel like a good person. I felt like trash, really.
Mamie's aunt remembers the moment well.
She's only a 9-year-old kid. She's not a criminal. My God, that's what they were treating her like. we got really upset, big time. I just wanted to run up there and just rip them off of her and take her out of there. It was just heartbreaking, you know? And the thought of it makes me want to cry.
So, is this against the law? What is the current law in Pennsylvania regarding use of restraints on youth in courtrooms?
Well, Pennsylvania actually doesn't have any prohibitions against the use of shackles or restraints in courtrooms on youth. There are some rules and regulations that govern using restraints in detention facilities or placement facilities, using restraints during transporting kids between facilities or back and forth to court, but there's nothing actually that says that you can't have shackles on kids in the courtroom. And because that's the case, there are unfortunately counties across Pennsylvania that do use restraints on youth in the courtroom.
So what specific reform does Juvenile Law Center advocate for on this issue?
Well, the only valid reason for using restraints in the courtroom is safety or to prevent flight. And there are clear guidelines for adult defendants that govern the use of restraints. And it ensures that they can only be restrained after the judge determines that there's a risk of escape, courtroom disruption, or harm to the public. So Juvenile Law Center supports a rule that's been proposed by the state's rule committee that would provide similar protections to juveniles, prohibiting the use of restraints in courtrooms. We support this proposed rule, but we also think it could go farther and give the juvenile an opportunity to contest the court's order of restraints and have a hearing on the issue. We also anticipate in this legislative session that there will be legislation introduced to prohibit the use of shackles and restraints in courtrooms.
When and if the legislation is introduced, Juvenile Law Center will support strong protections against the use of shackles. If you care about this issue and want to stop the use of shackling on youth in courtrooms as well, you can write or call your legislators to support this ban. Special thanks to Maymay and her aunt for sharing their story. Stay tuned for the rest of our Reform in the Wake of Luzerne series. On the next podcast, we'll discuss the need for unwaivable right to counsel and meaningful appellate and post-conviction remedies. To find out more information about Luzerne and Civarello's trial, go to www.jlc.org/Luzerne. You can subscribe to this podcast on our website or by going to iTunes. Thanks for listening.